17 minutes past 8 Central African time. You're listening to Sabah Al Muslim on Radio Islam International. We cross over now to India, to Delhi in specific, and we're going to be speaking to Yusuf Umar. He's well known to many South Africans. He was formerly a correspondent at ENCA. He's now based at the Hindustan Times. He's the mobile editor. We'll talk about his decision to go to India and also mobile journalism and what the future holds for it. Yusuf, Jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Wa alaikum salam. It's great to be talking to you guys. It's great to hear a familiar accent from all the way here in Delhi, India.
Now, you have traveled the world and visited many places even before you came back to South Africa and took up your position at ENCA. What was the motivating factor for settling in India, and why now?
Why India? Why now? This is one of the top five media markets in the world. And in terms of numbers, it's probably one of the biggest. In the next few years, you're going to have 1 billion people using the internet, primarily on their cell phones. The amount of people that are digesting stories, the amount of people that are engaging with our content here is greater than perhaps anywhere in the world. That's why it's an exciting place to be in India. And I'd suggest you come and join us here.
I would love to. I mean, traveling India is a fascinating experience, isn't it?
It's my first time here, actually. As you said, I've been the world over, but it's my first time coming back to the romantic motherland, trying to find out if it in fact does feel anything like home, despite Indians having left this place and moved to South Africa some 150 years or four generations ago. It is a fascinating place in terms of economics, in terms of politics. It's a complex country. It's so big that my grandfather often described it as being a country within a country within a country. There's sort of enormous differences between the states. There's such different dynamics between north and south. It's going to take a long time before I can truly grasp this country and the media landscape.
Have you been to the GAM, Yusuf?
I haven't been to the GAM. I haven't. That's definitely on my priority wish list. At the moment, I'm in Delhi, which is the Johannesburg, I would say, of India. It's the rat race, the metropolis, and it also happens to be the most polluted city in the world right now, which obviously is not ideal, but we're doing some interesting stuff with that in the journalism space. The Hindustan Times, where I've taken up this new position as the mobile editor, has fitted 100 sensors, air pollution sensors, across the city, which then provides us with real-time data on our website. So at any given point in time, somebody can go on and they can see exactly if it's a good day or a bad day to be taking a jog around Delhi.
Now, is the Hindustan Times the same media house where the former Mail and Guardian editor Nick Dawes is based?
That's right. I'm working under Nick Dawes at the moment. It's a paper that dates back 150 years and has its roots with the Gandhi family, in fact. It calls itself the first digitally integrated newsroom here in India, and really everything from the layout to the design, every aspect of this newsroom is all about social media being at the epicenter of everything we do, of looking at ways to create content that looks good on mobile devices as opposed to desktops. We really, really are putting that front and center of everything we do here, and at the same time the print newspaper, the stuff that you can use to mop up the floor, it's still the cash cow. It's still what brings in the revenue. But as long as you continue to have growth in print, and in India, it's one of the few places in the world where we are seeing growth in print, where more people are reading newspapers, more people are buying newspapers as they become more literate and people are becoming more affluent. The more money we make, basically, in the print, allows us to do more crazy things in the digital space.
Now, there's this perception, especially amongst Indians who now reside in South Africa, that India lags behind in most things. But when it comes to what you just mentioned, new media, social media, how much more advanced are they when it comes to the free availability of Wi-Fi, for example? How's the situation in India?
You know, I've been disappointed by the Wi-Fi access. I think South Africa has taken greater strides, in fact, in giving public access to Wi-Fi. If you look at the initiatives that are taking place in the city of Tswane or Bloemfontein, for example. But in terms of innovations in the mobile space, I think both India and South Africa, as what was formerly called developing countries, skip entire technological generations. They have the benefit that many people here in India didn't experience. Dial-up internet, for example. They went straight to broadband, or even they might have skipped broadband and gone straight to 4G on their cell phones. So in many respects, these economies sort of leapfrog into the next technological innovation. And India is at the center of that. If you look at banking systems and the ability to pay for things using a mobile phone and these sorts of online money, online wallets, India really is quite advanced. And media is no exception. I think the challenges we face is bandwidth. Data is prohibitively expensive. So it's about coming up with creative ways to deliver high-quality video content, for example, but in a way that people are willing to spend the data on and then to try and make it as economical as possible.
Now, mobile journalism, or Mojo as you call it, is this the future of news reporting?
Mobile journalism is a few things. I mean, it's the production of content using a mobile phone. So using what's in your pocket to shoot, to edit, and to distribute, to publish straight to content environments like Facebook, like Twitter, like Instagram. But it's also creating stories that work for mobile devices. I think it's the present. It's not necessarily the future. Right now, the platform is of choice is for you to be watching on that small screen. The platform of tomorrow may very well be virtual reality. That's something that we're increasingly exploring. The idea that you can wear a goggles or and you can immerse yourself in another environment. I can put you on the front line of the Syrian civil war and you can experience what it's like to be there. Or I can teleport you into an Ebola clinic and you can walk around and get a sense of the drama that's taking place. For me, that's the next platform. That's going to take over from the mobile. But today, right now, Mojo is very relevant. But it's increasingly not going to be us as the Hindustan Times or the media houses that are producing this Mojo content. It's the consumers that are actually driving what's coming back into the product. We can never have enough cameras on the ground. Since 9/11, since Twin Towers went down, the media, the conventional broadcasters, have never been the first to break a big story. It's always been civilians with their cell phones. Mm. So we need to start thinking about Mojo not in terms of content creation, but curation, in terms of being able to look at this great expanse of video that's coming in from all of these sources and coming up with algorithms to work out what is real and what isn't real. It's called tech in check, being able to fact check, and be able to take all of that and put it into something that's meaningful and useful and add value to the crowdsourced content. I don't call them citizen journalists because I don't think that they are journalists. I think journalism comes with a set of criteria and a set of principles that you learn and you adapt. But there's certainly a lot more cameras and eyes out there nowadays, and that's where Mojo is going to go. Mojo is going to become the people, the community, telling the story, and it's going to be our job to separate what's truthful from what's not.
Mm. Now, I understand that you are a huge believer in the power of Snapchat. In your opinion, why is Snapchat the next big thing? What are some of the things people might not have known about this so-called new kid on the social media block?
If any of your listeners are between the ages of, say, 15 and 25, they know exactly why Snapchat is relevant. And for those that aren't, listen up. Basically, purely on the numbers game, they've got 120 million daily users, which is probably about a tenth of Facebook, but they've only been around for 4 years. But if we look at videos specifically, every day there's 7 billion video views on Snapchat, which is about the same as Facebook. It's an immense amount of viewing that's happening. Snapchat is unlike other platforms. You post content and it lasts for 24 hours, and then it goes away. And that's a real appeal to a lot of people. There's sort of no consequences. They can go out, have a good time, and it's never going to affect their job prospects. Or at least they don't think it will in the near foreseeable future. It also happens to be the most intimate form of storytelling we've ever experienced. It's not quite live, but it's almost live. You're really getting a view of somebody that's far more immediate than, say, an Instagram where they've put lots of filters on it and they've really treated their image. It just feels real, and that's why we love it at the moment. And then going back to what I was talking about, so the ability to check whether it's authentic, by virtue of you having to film within the Snapchat app, as opposed to pulling something in from your camera roll, we know that it was shot right now. And then you can swipe across and you can put a time stamp on it so we know the time that it would take. Or you can put a geofilter so we know the place. It's all various steps that help us authenticate that it really is what somebody says it is. Of course, Snapchat has got huge limitations as well. It doesn't have a discovery function or any sort of ecosystem. So it's very difficult to share content or to aggregate how many likes you have. But it's an interesting space, and it's just one of many, many tools that we're using to tell stories. I don't think that we're going to say Snapchat is the be-all, end-all. It's applicable for some stories, and it's not applicable for others. I think the trick nowadays is to be what you call platform agnostic, to be across the board. You've got to be everywhere. You've got to be doing 6-second videos on Vine. You've got to be doing 15 seconds for Instagram. You've got to be absolutely everywhere that your audience is. And the days of telling your audience to come to your homepage, to come to radioislam.com or to go to hindustantimes.com are dead. Essentially, people want to see their content on their timelines, and that's where we're delivering it.
Mm. And finally, Yusuf, new social media seems to get shorter and shorter, like Vine and now Snapchat. And is it a case of people wanting to use less data, or is it a case of less brain power nowadays?
It's something like, some people describe it as being a bit like fast food. We want a quick fix. I think it really depends on the type of content that you're watching. There definitely is still a space for your long-form documentaries where you can really examine the intricacies. But I legitimately think people have less time in their hands and they want to be informed about more topics. So with changing the structure of how we tell stories, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting less information.
Mm.
We're just not doing two interviews and a reporter at the end saying, oh, coming to you live from Delhi. We're finding more creative ways to condense that information. If we look at Facebook, for example, the average video coming out of Daily Mail, Al Jazeera Plus, all of them, BuzzFeed, it comes in at 1 minute. So we know that people on Facebook like a 1 minute long video. But if you look at YouTube, for example, something up to the length of 10 minutes might do a little better. So it all depends on the platform you're working on. It's impossible to define that short is king. But people are definitely moving towards shorter platforms. And for the most part, in the millennial generation, moving away from long-form reading.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yusuf, jazakumullah for your time. It was a fascinating discussion, and we'll keep in touch, inshallah.
Thanks so much. Jazakallah. Great speaking to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
That was Yusuf Umar, formerly a correspondent at ENCA, now at the Hindustan Times, and he's the mobile journalism editor there at the Hindustan Times. We go for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get an update from Soweto about the passing of the well-known Imam Ibrahim Jasembe. Also, we will still play you the clip on the Scholar Transport Patrol issue, the quiz, the anecdote, and the Cape Report with Tasneem Adams. So, a hectic last half hour on Sabah Muslim.